Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Dugout Debate Podcast. I'm Tim Hasselbury.
And I'm Jack Simpson.
This week, we look at the controversy surrounding La Liga's decision to play a high-profile league fixture abroad for the first time. We look at the reasons why this is happening, examples of other sports leading the march on this trend, and what it means for the fans attending the matches. Chris isn't available for this one, so instead of the meticulously researched, high-quality and largely unbiased podcast you normally hear, this time Jack and I are going to bring you our own opinions and egos into the mix. Remember, if you disagree with us or you think we're incredibly forward-thinking gents, let us know on all of our social media, from Twitter to Facebook, at @dugout_debate. So, quickly, I'll just do a brief description of what's happening in La Liga. So very briefly, La Liga, the top league in the Spanish football pyramid, has announced that it will become the first top European league to move regular season games in a 15-year deal that will see games played in the US or Canada. I think it will just tend to be one game a season, maybe two, but for the start, it'll just be one.
15-year contract as well.
It's a 15-year deal, wow. Yeah. And by all intents and purposes, I think this was largely decided without any input from players or clubs. It was just La Liga decided this is going to happen. So we'll go into why and all the boring stuff later. But first, we'll have a quick look at sports where games are already played abroad, whether this is in league or cup or whatever. So, Jack, you'll go first with a bit of a rugby union.
Yeah, rugby union has been doing it for a little while now. So the Premiership has been having an international game in America for the last 2 years. And it's seemingly done quite well. I think it's quite a good fit as well because there's a big hype in NFL. Rugby union is quite similar. It's just not as big padded. But for to date, we've had two games from the English Premiership so far. The first one was in 2016 between London Irish and Saracens, which was hosted in the New York Red Bull Stadium. So a lovely, lovely place to play. This registered 15,000 people, which I think is pretty successful considering it was a club game and the first one that was over there. Obviously, London Irish, I am a London Irish fan, so I am quite biased, but they have a big international market because of the Irish side of their fans. So you can completely understand if I was to say that some of the fans probably were Irish and had followed Irish beforehand. The year later, Saracens then played, because unfortunately London Irish had been relegated that year, but Saracens played their second game over in America, in Philadelphia, this time, against the Newcastle Falcons. This had a little bit less of a turnout. It was about 7,000 fans. Probably based down to the fact that Philadelphia isn't as multicultural, if I'm allowed to say that, compared to New York. And probably wasn't going to be as successful. But you can see that there's interest there. This agreement that they actually have is a 5-game agreement, which obviously is going to last 5 years if they play their games once a year. The difference between the success between the actual club games and the international games is amazing. So 2 years ago, New Zealand played Ireland over in Chicago and actually had 60,000 fans turn up.
And it was a brilliant match as well, wasn't it?
Oh my God, yeah, it was an amazing outrageous match. Yeah. I think New Zealand pipped it right at the end, literally like a conversion had to be retaken because someone chased too early and the conversion basically won the game for New Zealand in the last kick of the game, which is amazing. And for them to sell that as a market to fans in America, you can imagine that they thrive on that with teams, with NFL and NBA going to overtime all the time. They'd love to have that last minute thriller, which I think would have done really, really well. But obviously they had 60,000 fans here, and I think it shows that they still have a little bit of work to do with the domestic level in terms of progressing it. But the league will continue to try to break into this market because I do think it's a sport that the Americans will love, and USA as a rugby team is growing massively. But they have to be careful. And I think this is the same with any sport that is going international, as you may have said in the La Liga. They've got to be careful and not expect their original home fans to merely be able to just jump on a plane and go to these games. So they have to be careful of how many games they take away from that league and that market so that they don't damage the market that they've already got in their home. It'll be interesting to see how they do in the next few years, in the next 3 years, especially with this agreement. But I do still see it growing, and I do still see, hopefully, that it goes successfully, because I do think it was a great idea.
A couple of things, just quickly. It's not just a Saris deal, is
no,
it?
No, it's not. It's
just
a
Premier League
deal,
Premiership,
yeah.
Sorry. Okay, but Saris are obviously quite
Saris
good.
Saris have done
the
two times, yeah.
And I'm absolutely stunned that All Blacks Ireland game was 60,000. That's so many people.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, it's amazing.
You do well to get that I mean, obviously, the impact's drawn quite a lot of attention, but I'm just surprised that so many Americans went to that. It's good.
In my experience in watching rugby, I think, like, if they were to send over the Barbarians team to go and play in New Zealand, I think that would be a great thing for them to go and do, because they love the, like, the market of the All-Star game where they can pick those best players. And yeah, the Barbarians is kind of that market for the rugby union, where the guys that aren't or available, they are picked up and they can build this team and they play expansive, like really exciting rugby. And I think that would be perfect for that sort of market.
Yeah, that would be good. I ever who doesn't enjoy the Barbarians games. Yeah. Anyway, I'll do a bit of NFL. So perhaps it's the most well-known sport to elope from its normal home base in American football, and of course the NFL. The first regular season American football game to be played abroad was in 1926, where the now defunct New York Yankees played the LA Wildcats in Toronto. This had a pretty much an 80-year hiatus after this point, where American football games that were played abroad were largely restricted to exhibition matches. The Cardinals then ended up playing the 49ers in Mexico City, and I haven't written down the year, but I think it was 2005. This eventually gave rise to the NFL International Series that we've all got to know more recently. That started in 2007 with the Giants playing the Dolphins in London at Wembley Stadium. And other than three subsequent games played in Mexico City, the majority of the games played outside the US have taken place in Wembley, with the occasional trip to Twickenham. Of course, Tottenham Hotspur, my beloved, have also agreed a 10-year deal to have one regular season game played per year at the new sparkly Tottenham Stadium, which of course still has plenty of wires hanging out. So the scheduled Seahawks versus Raiders game that was meant to happen this year will move to Wembley. So that's a quick rundown of the NFL. They're sort of old hat with this. They've been doing it for at least sort of 10, 13, whatever, however many years that is. And the NFL works abroad. There's a good following over here for sure. I'm not sure if the same could be said for the rest of Europe, but
I'd say there probably is. Not as much, I'd say, but I think there would be an interest. I know New Zealand and have an interest in that. Well, New Zealand, South America, Australia, New Zealand have a following.
There aren't as many people there, are there?
Obviously, true.
And like the concentration of people in Europe is far greater. Yeah. So I think Europe is a good market for the NFL to go to. And I think pretty much every time the NFL's come over to the UK, it's sold out, hasn't it? If not quite sold out, pretty much. And there is a good following. And I think it's often not necessarily that fans of those specific teams like going to watch it, but just fans generally go. So whenever you look in the stadium at Wembley or Twickenham game when the NFL's around, there's lots of people in whatever shirt colour there is, Texans, Phillies, you know, yada, yada, yada. So, it's good. I think the NFL does well coming over here. It doesn't seem to rile fans from the US too much, from what I understand. Yeah. Not being there, I don't really know. But I think the players certainly love it, which is not necessarily the case in the upcoming move from La Liga. But anyway, Rugby League, Jack.
So Rugby League obviously is the sister side of rugby compared to rugby union. So it's a little bit more hard hitting. Personally, I think it's a little bit more exciting because of the hard hitting with that as well. But I am an advocate in rugby union.
It's a lot quicker as well.
Yeah, it's a hell of a lot quicker, isn't it? Yeah. And it's very much more similar to America because American football because, well, not American football, but American sports because you have rolling subs and you can keep doing this and that. Because of that, it makes the game a lot quicker and a lot more fast paced and big hits and everything, which makes it exciting. And with that, it'd sell quite well in America. So the Super League, which is the league of rugby league in the UK, it hosted its first game outside of Europe for the first time. They say outside of Europe because we do have a Super League team that plays in France. I think it's Catalan Dragons. So the first game that they've hosted was in Australia in 2018, where Wigan played Hull. And it was in front of 12,500 people, which I think is brilliant. Australia and New Zealand are great markets for rugby league, and they were always going to do quite well because they have their own rugby league teams and strong leagues in themselves. And I think every so often you have games between the most successful team in UK or Europe playing the most successful team that's in New Zealand, Australia. And it's always quite a big hitting game. We also have a few British or English players, such as the Burgess brothers, who actually play in Australia and are very big in that market. So it really did help. And obviously we have a lot of English people that live in Australia and New Zealand as well. But to get 12,500 people, I think, is absolutely brilliant for a club game as well in rugby league that isn't as big of a market compared to rugby union. So I think that is absolutely brilliant. In the international side of it, England and New Zealand had agreed to play 3 tests in America, one game each year. This was to help in the hope of building the game's profile in America, because the 2025 Rugby World Cup is actually being staged there in North America. The first one was held actually in June, and they got 20,000 fans, which I think is again brilliant considering it's England and New Zealand. I know they're two of the biggest rugby league teams. But it shows that there is a fan base out there who do want to watch it. And because it's quite similar to American football, people would love to watch it. But there is bad news to that. Games between England and New Zealand have now been cancelled for the next two, mainly because the promoter, Jason Moore, failed to meet the deadline to pay the Rugby Football League and New Zealand Rugby League. You can imagine this is quite poor, because they did do quite well in that first game, and it doesn't really help when they're trying to do this to sell that market to an agreed World Cup that's going to be in America, which is going to be a big market anyway. New Zealand have already agreed to now play Samoa and Australia back home in New Zealand instead of playing England. So they're going to the rugby league is going to have to be speaking to America and try to work out a plan to kind of redo this whole agreement if they're trying to build the market, because I completely understand why they were trying to do it. But obviously, this has fallen apart now.
That's crazy. Yeah. They had this huge opportunity just in the cracks of their hands, and one bloke, it would be a bloke in the team. But, you know, letting everyone down by scuppering this opportunity. And being honest with you, I think the Rugby League has more of a chance of succeeding.
I completely agree.
And the US and Canada. I just think it's more closely aligned with American football. It's sort of easier to understand. Yeah. It's a lot more obvious. Okay, granted, some of their sort of post-breakdown things are a bit strange, where, you know, there's no challenging in the scrums and there's no contest of the breakdown, really.
But it's more big-hitting, hard-hitting, fast-paced.
Yeah, it's more hitting and more spectacular tries. Yeah. You know, the number of one-handed offloads, sort of unbelievable touchdowns that you get. It's more suited to that sort of American market. Yeah, and to be honest, one of the games that really got me into rugby league, I think it was an England-New Zealand game, and it was like huge scoring. Yeah. Crazy, and you know, you had two or three of those crazy tries which you just wouldn't see in normal year.
I think it was crazy, which was great as well, is the fact that the leagues, and this is because I understand it a little bit more, is the fact that the leagues of like the European leagues and the Australian leagues, they are interlinked in terms of when they play. This is not the same as rugby union, where you get games. The rugby union season pretty much runs all through the year. It's just dependent on which teams play. Because like Super Rugby will be playing, like New Zealand played this morning as of the 8th of September, against Argentina, but England won't be playing an international game for another 5-6 weeks because the season's only just started. But in rugby league, because the seasons are linked, they are able to do this market where they go and say the best from the Northern Hemisphere versus the best of the Southern Hemisphere. And I think that really fits really, really well as well.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
It'll be great to see. Yeah.
Yeah, sort of like a Champions League of stuff, maybe abroad.
Yeah.
That would be quite interesting. Shall I move on to football? You got anything else to say?
No, with that, that's pretty much that.
Okay, so we'll do a nice little neat circle and just finish off with football, and then we'll just have a general discussion about how we feel about all this. La Liga moving some games to the US won't be the only times that a football federation decided that games should be played abroad within your European leagues. This specifically is not a league, but this was a cup. The Italian Supercoppa was played in the US in 1993, and that fixture has been played abroad in China, Qatar, and this year in Saudi Arabia, a total of about 8 times, so flickering between the three of those nations. I think the probably first thing to say is why do teams do this? Obviously, it's just to reach different markets, markets that have all these potential fans in it. You know, sport is generally exciting, and people love sport regardless of what it necessarily is from place to place. And if you've got these huge potential untapped markets with huge potential fat checks of money to bring in TV deals and that sort of thing, that's 100% why you do it. And if you can get extra shirt sales, memberships, all that sort of stuff to people who won't be attending the stadium necessarily, brilliant. And if your team has to go abroad for one game, you lose the revenue from that. Are you offsetting that by getting revenue back from all those other international fans that come along. I mean, quite a few people, when they choose a football team or any other team, it might just be the first team that they go and attend the game at, or somebody's just gone, come on, let's go watch this. And, you know, oh, okay, I'll support this team. For me, it was for the NFL, let's say, just pick it out of the air. I support the Houston Texans just because that was the team on Hard Knocks that season. I was like, that'll do. Yeah, that'll be my team.
I was a bit more of a glory supporter in terms of NBA, because when I started getting into NBA, Miami Heat were amazing with LeBron James and they went on and won so many, but now obviously they're not as great, but I'm still a Miami Heat fan. It's just timing, really, isn't it?
It's just like your football team, really, isn't it?
Quite.
Glory seeking in the, when you were choosing a team back in 2004.
How was
Oh, yeah, fine. You can totally see the reasons why, and it's all very logical, but these things sort of have to be done with a bit of tact. So it looks like the game that will be played abroad will be Girona versus Barcelona in Miami. It looks like that. I think I've seen people say, oh, it's like 90% done or 95% done, whatever. As of today, that looks like what it's going to be.
Do you think, do you think that it's going to only be basically showing how successful it is, but they're going to have teams like Real Madrid, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid go over there to actually get the market to grow?
100%. I don't see in the first few years that it will be any other teams than that. And they will take games that will be sort of, it should go in the favour of the bigger team. You know, the Liga is a little bit more sort of a 3-horse, 2-horse, whatever you want to call it, race, just because the disparity between the top teams and the bottom teams. If you want to check out our podcast on money, I think it was our second one, the financial fair play one, where we talk about the disparity in the leagues between Barca and Real Madrid, who basically take all the TV money, and then the rest of the teams in the league. It's quite crazy. So the idea behind this is so that the Liga can catch up with the revenue streams that the Premier League draws in, but I don't believe that this is going to solve that problem. So we'll come back to that sort of thing in a bit. So it's a Girona home game that's going to be played out in the US, and bearing in mind the clubs have not really been consulted on this, I think this is crazy. Because say Girona are in a relegation battle, right? All the other teams that are in that relegation battle will be able to play their home games against the big teams at home, and Girona will be then plonked in Miami, where everyone who will go to that game will be a Barcelona fan. They effectively play Barca away twice in one season. And those potential 3 points or whatever could make a huge difference to their season. They could be relegated off the back of the fact that they had to go to Miami and play an effective another away game. Whereas if they'd been at home, they might still lose, but at least they've got their fans behind them. The Girona-Barca game is a derby. I feel like every game in Spain is a derby, to be perfectly honest with you. But it's a derby. Home fans do make a difference, and you know, this is why the away rule exists. You know, home fans do make a difference, and it's meant to be harder to go away. They surely lose out. Girona lose out. Barcelona don't, because they get all the money from it anyway. They get all the extra merchandise. But in reality, how many of those fans that are over in America are going to end up supporting Girona by the end of the match?
Yeah, very unlikely. It's not really fair.
Yeah, it's very unlikely. So it's basically a drive to get Barca and Real and possibly Atletico Madrid a bit richer. Again, if you think we've completely misunderstood this whole thing, get in touch with us, because I'm more than happy to be educated, but that's my take.
I mean, I think we understand that it is to grow the interest in football. It's just the way that they've done this is questionable.
Very backhanded. Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of this going on in Spanish football at the moment, with the sort of backhanded nature of the appointment of Lopetegui at Real Madrid, and then the histrionics of the president of the Spanish FA doing his thing and firing him just before a World Cup. Like, actively, he made a decision that only hurt his country's chances in the World Cup. Obviously, with this, the players have sort of said, we were never consulted. I'm sure the clubs must have been consulted in some way, and quite a few of them probably agreed to it in principle. Yeah. But it just feels like this came out very quickly. And this is probably in response to Scudamore of the Premier League fame suggesting that this 39th game was going to happen. Not that it will. But I think Spain have just gone, that's a good idea. Let's do that. Get some more money, try and catch up with the Premier League. Ask a slightly difficult question. I think this is going to make up most of the rest of the podcast. But Jack, how do you feel about games being played abroad across sport generally?
See, I'm not against it. I'm a big fan of American sports coming over here. I've been to the NBA game that they played in London. So I'm obviously a fan of the idea. But comparing markets between sports is very difficult. So the likes of the NBA and the NFL as market are two of the biggest markets in the world. And obviously football is a huge market as well. But they've got to approach it very carefully in terms of how they try to move sports over into different countries. Some sports are going to be more successful than others, like we spoke about earlier. Personally, I think rugby league will be more supported in America than rugby union. Don't get me wrong, I still think there'll be fans of rugby union in America. But as we spoke earlier, I think the sport as a whole fits their market a little bit better. So it really depends. I do think certain sports will work successfully in markets, but it really is how they approach that market. Some sports won't do as well, and it's the way that they do it, as you spoke about in the La Liga. If they're going to put teams out, they have to be the top three teams to be able to get fans to go there and to actually really pay for this whole idea that they want to do, because smaller teams are not going to have the market or are not going to even be very well known in different markets like America. I'm obviously a fan of it, but they've really got to approach it carefully.
Agreed, 100%. For me, it totally depends on the sport. There's a very real danger with this that I'm going to be labelled as a hypocrite for what I say, because I'm going to say, oh, in some sports it's okay, but then I don't want my team going abroad. That's a very fair point, and count it as acknowledged, because, you know, I'm biased.
There's a way, they've got to sit down and work this out, because obviously it's going to have an impact on the team. Like you were saying, who's the away team that's playing Barcelona?
Girona.
Girona, that's in a sense two away games against the best team in the league, or one of the best teams in the league. Yeah. It's just not fair.
And when your financial future depends on, you know, trying to get as many points as you can, if you effectively write off 6 points a season, I know that's not what happens in reality, but normally you'd write off the 3 points at home against Barcelona and then at least attempt to get a draw, or if not, a surprise win against them. But, you know, that's really unlikely to happen in a completely different setting where the fan base is largely against you twice. I just don't see it working. So, yes, I acknowledge that some of these points could be made as a counter-argument to the stuff that I'm going to say later. But I think we'll start with... I'll go back to the NFL, because I think that's a good place to start. I think the NFL has approached moving stuff abroad in the right way. It seems to be largely... Not random, because I know you have an idea which teams are going to play over in the UK by the end of the previous season, according to how well the teams did in the regular season and in the playoffs. So you already know which teams are going to go. That non-biased nature of selection means that no team is going to be stung too much. It'll be a team goes away for a game, they come back, and the home away advantage thing only exists once. Whereas in the context of La Liga, as we previously said, the bias seems to be heavily weighted towards the bigger clubs playing their away game against a smaller team, if that makes sense. So you're never going to get the Clásico played over in Miami. That just won't happen, because that's the big one in Spain. Yeah. That's where you can charge loads and loads and loads for a ticket.
Matter where it is, because everyone across the world watches it no matter what time.
And they wouldn't dare let Barcelona or Real Madrid have an away game where they should have had a home game. So it's only ever going to mean that the smaller team loses. So yes, I think the NFL has done it in the right way. And I think that the way they've moved these games over to the UK really suggests to me that within the next, let's just say 20 years, I'm pretty confident there will be a franchise based in the UK.
Yeah, I was going to say, it kind of gives you a feeling that there is, because there's an interest in it, and it is the perfect market for them to try to make it international.
100%. Well, Daniel Levy, as we know, Levy, however you say his name, is an astute businessman. And I think that this deal that they agreed with the NFL to get this 10-year partnership sort is going to test the water, see if you can make this work ground sharing wise as a sort of feasible option. And if the answer to that is yes, in 5 or so years, I think plans will start be moving forward for one of the teams to move out to London and become, you know, the London Eagles.
Will you become a fan of that team?
Will be the ones. Probably not, but, you know, I'll still go to the games. Yeah. And that, at the end of the day, that's what they want to sell out. And
the thing is, it will sell out. Like, there is a huge market for it, and people will probably look at season tickets and doing this, that, the other, and actually going, you know what, I may not be there to support the team that's the local team, but I'm getting to see every other team in the league, and it's like, great.
And I'm sure, like, if I don't end up supporting them, they'll definitely become a second team. Yeah. I feel like in the NFL you can have second teams, because you know, you don't get the full league playing everyone playing everyone sort of format going. If we move it across to football, my big problem with this is that I think the culture of football compared to pretty much any other sport is very much when you play a game, there's every chance that the other team that you're facing, if they're a local rival, it's your neighbour's team. Yeah. or it's your neighbours playing for them, yeah, or whatever. So the history of football relies on these rivalries, and these rivalries have existed for ages. And I'm not saying that this doesn't happen in the NFL or anything other than that, NBA, all that sort of stuff. You know, local rivalries happen. But specifically in the UK, for instance, you could throw a tennis ball from, okay, granted you'd have to have quite a big arm, but from Liverpool to the Everton Stadium, yeah, or from Spurs Stadium to, yeah, Arsenal Stadium. You know, these things happen on a very local level. And what makes the Premier League or La Liga so good is that, you know, the people live this. This is their life. Like, they turn up to these big matches, and they're, you know, their next week is entirely, their mood, the whole of the next week, in fact, is entirely dependent on what happens that weekend. That kind of intense geographical pressure, it's not something that you get in the US because it's just so massive.
Yeah. I think
by artificially moving something away from where all the fans base kills,
yeah,
it
and
for football.
And talking about those rivalries, I think the rivalries that you can kind of compare it to, this is in the market in the NBA, is it's not the franchise that you're having a rivalry between, it's the current squads that they have and the relationships or non-relationships between those two teams where it does,
yes,
get physical.
Yeah.
But those teams obviously aren't going to be the same over a 5 year, well, they may be the same over a 5 year period, but it probably won't be much longer. And then that rivalry kind of dies out.
So to put it sort of very badly and bluntly, Tottenham and Arsenal will always be Tottenham,
yes,
and Arsenal. But like the Cavaliers will be, you know, LeBron James. I stop me if I've
no,
got that
right.
wrong. Because,
oh no, he's, yeah, actually left. So, he's out at the Lakers. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, when it was yeah, LeBron James, then they were LeBron James's team.
Yes.
That's what they were. They weren't the Cleveland Cavaliers first. They were LeBron James's team. The same goes for Steph Curry and yada yada,
yeah,
and yada,
yeah,
yada yada. But Tottenham and Arsenal will always be Tottenham and Arsenal. And you've got generations of families,
yeah,
that have grown up and supported those particular clubs. And there's just this intense, bitter rivalry that just survives and lives on. And I think even with the Premier League going as commercial as it has, when you go back to those days where there are these intense rivalries, stadiums completely change. You know, the library that is the Emirates then becomes into like a bullpen,
yeah,
doesn't it? When it's the Spurs derby. So again, I'll happily admit that these hypocritical arguments could be used either way, and you can just say that I'm misunderstanding how rivalries work in the US and in other sports and that sort of thing. But I think that the unique geographical context of football and the sort of the levels of pyramid or the way that the leagues are structured means that those rivalries can develop over time. So you can have a team that progresses up the ranks and then becomes a rival with, yeah, another local team in the top league. So say, for instance, Leighton Orient then come up and become a powerhouse in the Premier League. Those rivalries will then develop because they're so close to all,
yeah,
these other London clubs. Whereas in the NFL, it's just a fixed thing. You know, there's no promotion or relegation or anything like that. Those teams are there, and geographically they're so spread out that, you know.
It's like the same, like looking at like West Ham Millwall, there's a clear,
yes,
rivalry between them, but they haven't played each other for so long in the league because there is a difference between it. And the same as like Southampton and Portsmouth, there is a rivalry,
yeah,
because of the geographical, how close they are to each other. But since Portsmouth kind of fell from the top tier, they haven't played Southampton in years, but there is still going to be a rivalry between those two teams.
Yeah, if they faced each other in the,
yeah,
cup, it would be like as vicious as any,
exactly,
other given rivalry in the Premier League. And I think that the big fear with football is that, so as it's not a franchise sport, it's very much, we are based here, we are XX, unless you're West Ham and you move across the river, unless you're Arsenal and you move from Woolwich. But the clubs are based in a geographical area for a reason, and they get their fans largely and predominantly from that area. And then fanships in the future are based on, okay, what does your dad support? Okay, I'll support them, or I've got great family ties up there, so I'll support,
yeah,
them, and all that sort of thing. It does slightly concern me that I can definitely see a future in the not too distant future where an ex-billionaire from whatever country will come over, buy a team. Let's say West Ham, for,
yeah,
instance, who've already moved stadiums. So they're a club that have done this. Say a billionaire comes over and buys West Ham and then just says, right, we're off to the US. We're becoming a US team.
Yeah.
Because they see that market and they say, right, we want to be the team in the US in the Premier League. I can kind of see that happening.
It's so damaging, but I know exactly
not soon,
what you mean.
But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can call me fanciful and whatever, but the football is so big and so full of money and so ripe for corruption and all that sort of stuff.
Use it as a really, really small example is Wasps moving from London to Coventry. Like, obviously they did it because they couldn't financially stay in London, But they probably lost a few of their fans moving away and going to Coventry because of the fact that it was so far away. And it would be the same sort of, well, even worse if they were to go over to a different country like the USA.
I agree, yeah. I think, to then be a hypocrite, I think that the fact that WASP has done this and show that it can work. And, you know, again, the UK geographically is not actually that big. Yeah. So it is viable for any old Londoner to pop up to Coventry, which only takes an hour and a half or so.
Yeah.
Watch their team and come back. I mean, for me to get to Wembley from where I am, it's only sort of, you know, 10 miles in one direction, but I have to go into central London and then back out. So it would take me an hour and a half to get to Wembley when if you just chucked me as the crow flies, it would be easy. Yeah. And it would be the same when Spurs move back to their new stadium. You know, I've got to go all the way across London. So the that argument sort of falls down a bit when you think of the UK geographically. But then if you did move, you know, West Ham again to somewhere else outside London, say towards MK Dons, there'd be uproar. I'm just using them as an example because they've recently moved and frankly, they don't really matter. Sorry, Henry. But yeah, you know, that's the argument I'm making. I think that's pretty much it. Like, I've had my argument. Do you have any further thoughts, Jack?
No, I'm in quite the same agreement with you. I don't really have much more to add, to be honest.
I don't think that the Premier League is going to survive this for long before games will be played abroad.
And like, to look at it back in from my side, from the rugby side, obviously they have already started doing it, but you've got high ups in the RFU and the Premiership Rugby, and what's it called now, the Gallagher Premiership. They're already saying that they know that their fan base is the fan base that they've already grown. And they've got to be very careful at how they choose what games go to the other market, because I can already tell you from a London Irish fan that there was a small uproar from the Irish fans when they were going, okay, you're getting a season ticket and you're paying your season ticket, but one of the games is in America and that game isn't actually going to be part of your season ticket because it's not under that market. So you can see that they might annoy certain fan bases, but there's such a big upside if they do it correctly in terms of building a market over there. Like, America have just opened up their own rugby union league, which is competitive, and it has some of it, like I think it was the last podcast that we did on Ben Foden moving over there and going, I know it was a different link to it, but he moved over there and there is a professional league over there, so you can show that there is an interest over there. They just got to really market how they build it, and I understand taking games from the actual current Premiership, the Gallagher Premiership over there. They've just got to be very careful.
The way it could work, Not that I think this is a solution in any way, but if, say, for instance, you pack out, you know, 100,000 seater stadium in the US, for instance, let's just take that as a, however fictitious that may be, there's a 100 seater stadium ready for a Premier League game in the US. Let's call it somewhere good, like New York, for instance. Yeah. So you're going to get lots of fans regardless. And the clubs go, so the Premier League says to the clubs, right, Team X and Team Y, every year, we'll have to go and play one game over there. It will be random as to which teams will have to go. You know, it would be drawn out of a hat. And to do this, to make sure that your fans don't miss out, the season ticket holders will be, either they'll be recompensed for it, which, you know, I think that's actually happened for, or that's in the pipeline for Jerome Barcelona stuff, fine. Or you say, okay, so this 100,000-seater stadium, however much of that is normally filled by a home game in, you know, X club at home normally, those fans can be paid for to go out. You know, it's a big expense, but, you know, they can strike deals with whatever airline sponsors them currently to get them over there. So half the stadium will be filled with fans from the local area who are going on a jolly over in, you know, the US or something like that. This is, granted, this is fanciful, but this is how I could see it working. And then the other half will be, you know, fans from the US. So you both get that the sort of local part of it, they can be as vociferous as they like and they can do all their chants that make football so unique and different and a good pressurized environment. So
yeah, and like we can see the amount of away fans that turn up to, fans that turn up to away games. I mean, in a sense, that is similar in the fact that you're going to a different country to go and watch the game. Obviously, ignore the home fans in this whole example, but you get fans, you get a large amount of fans going to different games in the Champions League and this, that, the other. So you can see that fans are open to travelling to go to these games home or away anyway.
Yeah. I mean, the passion for football travels. You know, people go to all the way across Russia to go and watch, you know, Arsenal play Ludogorets or whatever. And they do this because they love it. And I think that if you say, okay, this is going to happen, but it won't be your team every year. It's just this year, your team has got to go and do this. There you go, guys. There are X number of you that sort of proven members of the fan base who turn up regularly every season. You guys go. We'll pay for most of it, or we'll pay like the extra costs that, you know, you're having to take because it's abroad. Get those fans over there. Get that atmosphere going. Have the American fans or whoever it is. I'm now very conscious that I'm starting to sound like I'm saying that American fans are any worse. And, you know, it works applicably the other way. People make these crazy, crazy journeys to come and watch Tottenham once or Dortmund once, or, you know,
and there are big fans of the ones that are from the local side.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not saying that any fan is different to any other fan, but I'm saying in terms of getting that atmosphere, which is the big selling point of a lot of football, over there, this is a potential solution. Granted, this is kind of ridiculous. This will never happen, and there's too much money wanting to be grabbed for that opportunity to ever happen. I think the owners of football clubs rather have a stale environment but get loads of money than have a good environment and have to fork out loads for people to go and watch it. Like I said, I think that's one of the ways you could solve it, and the angle would be reduced because again, you know, it's random. You just draw the teams out of the hat or out of a bowl, and then you try and subsidize the fans.
And I think that's why the NFL and the NBA do really well.
Yes.
That's exactly why I think the NBA and the NFL do it perfectly. Obviously, I don't know as much into the NFL as you probably do, but I can see it from the NBA side and the fact that they are random teams that are picked. It's not the same two teams that come over and play. And you can understand that the NBA season is one of the most difficult structurally wise because they have 82 league games or season games before it even gets to the playoffs, which is unbelievable on its own. But they try to facilitate and manage that team's game time or whatever so that they will have a week to go over there and play that one game, if that makes sense, so that they have time to get ready for it and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you're totally right. And by the way, you probably know about as much as I do about the NFL. I'm no expert in any way, but you know, a lot of these points, granted, we're making as observers rather than passionate fans. I think that you probably judged by the tone of this podcast, we do love football, and we do love a lot of other sports, but probably my main sport that I watch on a regular basis would be football. But you know, and our passion about this argument comes from that perspective. Say if I was an American NFL fan, I might be completely different with regards to football, and maybe I wouldn't understand. So I appreciate there's arguments from both camp, but this is the dugout debate. I don't think we've actually probably had a big debate on this yet. Chris and I tend to agree about stuff, and hopefully Jack can come and stir the pot a little bit. But like I said, if you disagree with anything we said, or you think we're those forward thinkers that I mentioned at the beginning, just get in touch with us, drop us a message. We won't be offended, unless you actually offend us, then we will be offended. At @dugout_debate is where you find us on most of the social media stuff. I think we also have we have Instagram going as well, and our website, www.dugoutdebatepodcast.co.uk. Find us on there. Actually, it's .com, isn't it?
.com.
Find us on there. We actually put up a lot of our extra reading if you're new to the podcast. All the stuff that we've sort of researched for the podcast will pop up there, just so you can have a read, see where we've got our information from, have we misread it, all that sort of thing. Let us know. We tend to put nice big documents on that if you're really keen, you can have a big read, like the entry thing that I mentioned last time. Yeah, so feel free to have a little listen. Hopefully we'll be, like I said, we're trying to get more on it with the social media and actually engaging with people.
And we want a debate as well. We want to hear from
you. We're happy to argue. You know, we're critical people. I'm happy to have my view changed if I'm wrong and I'm proven completely wrong. Jack, you're the same, but then you are an Arsenal fan, so I don't know. But yes, I think that's it for this week's episode of the Dugout Debate. Thank you very much for listening, and thanks, Jack.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye, everyone.